welcome to this podcast series from Academic Impressions titled Rethinking the Role of Service and Promotion in Tenure, Defining It, Measuring It, and Addressing Inequities. This is the second podcast of a three-part series that will bring together examples of innovative and evolving thinking and practices around service and personnel reviews, both at the unit and central levels, with the aim of helping to transform existing structures and policies. Today, we will focus on measuring service. My name is Alicia Miranda, and I lead our faculty success work at Academic Impressions. In this podcast, Erica Zimmerman, School Director of the School of Health Sciences in the College of Health and Human Sciences at Western Carolina University, offers a unit-level example of an innovative yet simple tool she developed for her college to use in mapping service time and assessing the value and impact of service rather than just the number of requirements on record. We'll discuss the importance of transparency, faculty buy-in, and shifting expectations and definitions of service. As part of this podcast, you will be able to download accompanying resources that have been mentioned throughout. So with that being said, hi, Erica. I'm really lucky to have you joining me here today.
Hi, Alicia. Thanks for providing this opportunity and an accessible space for these important conversations.
Absolutely. Before we dive into hearing a little bit more about the work that you're doing at your institution, talk to me in general about the shifting expectations and definitions of service in higher ed. What are you seeing right now?
Good question, Alicia. Historically, service has been viewed and functioned as a faculty responsibility and a critical component of shared governance. Service is one leg of the three-legged stool we so often discuss as part of the professoriate, with the other two legs being teaching and scholarship. And faculty are historically evaluated on teaching, scholarship, and service as part of the annual reviews, tenure, and promotion. However, service is rarely well-defined, yet something expected. And if it is defined, clear criteria for evaluation is often limited, if it even exists. And so during a review period, it often doesn't carry much weight or invoke as much conversation as the teaching and scholarship evaluation. For some, it just becomes the category for anything that's not linked to teaching and scholarship. So over the past decade, or possibly longer, depending on your institutional culture, we've experienced a proliferation of committees, subcommittees, task force, faculty-student engagement, and other service opportunities on our campuses. And this has been particularly true the past 2 years as universities and faculty work together to address, support, and meet the needs around the global pandemic, civil unrest and social justice, and diversity, equity, and inclusion. What I see now is a culmination of confusion, fatigue, frustration, and overcompensation surrounding service. And let me explain each of those just a little bit. Confusion, we're seeing uncertainty about what is it that I'm supposed to be doing? What are the expectations for service? And how many committees do I need to serve on to meet those expectations? Is it quality or is it quantity of the service that I'm doing? If you ask a committee or a task force or a service opportunity, the leader of that, for their clear purpose, outcomes, and timelines, often they can't provide it. It's unclear maybe what the purpose is, how much of commitment there will be, the time that will be involved, the outcomes that will be produced. The response is often vague. And so there's confusion on multiple levels around service. The fatigue factor, how much is too much? We're definitely seeing that right now in faculty as they're exhausted from the sudden shift in teaching modalities, the blurring of boundaries between work and personal life, and the overall toll COVID placed on personal lives for them. A committee that they thought might be low effort suddenly is expanding to do more and more, and maybe not even yielding meaningful work along the way. And so there's just overall fatigue and burnout with service as a whole, but also sometimes just individual specific committees. I'm also seeing this new level of frustration. Is everybody pulling their fair share? How am I and others being held accountable? And when somebody can't get a clear answer to that, they become very frustrated about that. I see frustrations about faculty wanting to meet their service requirements, but being challenged to do that, particularly when committees are nominated committees. So you have to be nominated to serve on that committee, and you never end up getting elected to a committee, and that becomes frustrating. So it becomes more about how well known somebody is or how well liked a person is than it is about opportunities and accessibility to be able to serve. And so that can make it a challenge and create a great deal of frustration. And then overcompensation is this fourth category, and it's relatively new that I've been observing recently. And it's not overcompensation in terms of funding or payment. It's more about overcompensation in that I've noticed that some of our faculty were really feeling overwhelmed with meeting their teaching or their scholarship expectations, particularly during the pandemic. And so they were looking for other ways to feel good about themselves and to feel connected and to feel a sense of belonging. And for several faculty, they may find that through service, because now they're engaging with others. They're feeling like they're doing meaningful work, particularly over these last 2 years. And so they were overcompensating for how they were feeling in teaching and scholarship. And they moved into really doing a lot of work and good work in service, but to the detriment of their teaching and or scholarship. And so, again, that's something relatively new that I've seen the last couple of years. Doesn't mean it didn't exist before, but something that I've observed more now. And I also think overall, we're seeing this cultural, and maybe it's a generational shift, but a cultural shift regarding our understanding and perception of service and the expectations to meet service. There are more conversations now about examining how we define service, identifying clear expectations, and being intentional about time allocation. We're identifying and seeking to acknowledge disparities across service now with women, faculty of color, and gender nonconforming faculty often carrying a larger burden of service and mentoring. So this is just a little bit of what I've been seeing in the shift over time related to service, Alicia.
That's so helpful, Erica, to be able to really see that bigger picture. And I think it really sets the stage well for the conversation we're going to have. It also really, really underlines when you say frustration, lack of clarity, exhaustion. It gives us a wonderful sense of what the challenges are. And I think that's the piece that is so compelling. So many people face those challenges. But what I'm excited about, what you and I are going to chat about today, is what a potential solution to some of these challenges look like. And so I'd love to narrow in a little bit more specifically now on your institution and your work. Describe some of the challenges you were facing when it came to measuring service.
Yeah, thanks, Alicia. So a little context, Western Carolina University is internationally recognized as a Carnegie Engaged Institution, and we have a strong history and focus on engagement. We're also a regional comprehensive institution, very committed to serving our native and rural communities where we're located. Service is a part of who we are and what we do. It's part of our culture. And so faculty in our school, we're experiencing the same challenges I mentioned earlier, this confusion, fatigue, frustration, overcompensation, even before the pandemic. So in 2019-20, our school spent the year reviewing and ultimately revising the definitions and expectations around service as it relates to our annual faculty evaluations, tenure, and promotion. And it was clear early on that service expectation and evaluation criteria were not clear in our TPR and annual review documents. For example, one sentence stated the annual evaluation was based on the service goal set at the beginning of the year. And that's all that it said. There was no guidance on whether or not the goal was even achieved. So there was no way for a faculty member to know if they met expectations. Another sentence, as we read further through our older documents, stated that a faculty member should complete service at two levels within the school, college, or university to meet expectations. But there was no reference or framework around accountability to the level of engagement regarding attendance or contributions, recognition of the time involved, allocation that aligned with the workload, assigned for service or the impact of the service. One just needed to be on two committees. That was all. And so our first challenge was really ensuring transparency and creating a safe space for faculty to share their perspectives, needs, and ideas around service and the challenges they were experiencing. We had ongoing communication and dialogue because we felt that was very important throughout the year. And so we provided several venues to receive and share information during this process through faculty meetings within our school. We offered open forums. We sent out surveys. We had small discussion groups. We had discussion groups within programs. And these were all scheduled throughout the year to gather input, ideas, and concerns. It was a time-consuming process. However, it was important to meeting the faculty where they were with their comfort level and expressing their views. And we wanted faculty to know their input was being heard and why or how it was being incorporated. So these were avenues as well to share thoughts and potential changes or drafts along the way. Our second challenge became defining service in ways that aligned with our university's faculty handbook, the college workload document, and our institutional mission, like I mentioned before. So we spent time developing definitions of institutional, professional, and community service, along with providing some examples, although we didn't try to be all inclusive, but just some basic examples to help guide faculty. And then our third challenge was creating clear expectations for service. We spent the last half of the year discussing what service meant, what are service activities versus job responsibilities, and how we wanted to be evaluated. And we wrestled with creating prescriptive definitions and expectations versus having flexible expectations or guidelines. And we went back and forth between our faculty handbook and our college's guidelines for assigning faculty workloads. And so many other questions came forward during this process as well, Alicia. For example, does service apply over summer if we're on a 9-month contract? Does a faculty member in the first year have the same expectations as someone that's in their 5th year or their 10th year? Do service expectations change based upon rank? And can someone do community and professional service and no institutional service? And then also, how does one exceed expectations? That's an important piece as well, because we have some amazing faculty doing amazing work with our community partners and professional organizations, in addition to serving our institution well. And so ultimately, faculty developed a narrative for service that was progressively increasing in service expectations while creating an opportunity for new faculty to develop and implement a service plan. The expectations also provided flexibility for faculty to build their case to meet or exceed expectations, allowing for creative and innovative service to happen. And so faculty would provide a narrative outlining contributions made to service, including impact and effort. And we made sure that effort was clarified. And so we have a college workload document right now, and we tend to allocate 10% service effort per semester to each of our faculty, but we have the flexibility to adjust that so that 10% per semester or 20% overall for the year can be adjusted up and down based on what a faculty member is participating in. And so we wanted to make sure that we aligned our new criteria with the college's workload criteria to create that flexibility around percent effort allocated for service. We also identified that over time, faculty should be engaged in leadership roles or demonstrate how they've provided more significant contributions to the service that they're engaged in. And that doesn't mean they have to have a leadership role or significant contribution on everything that they do, but they needed to show evidence of that over time. And we wanted to be clear that service should be varied across school, college, and the university, but that is not required at every level, every year. We did align with our faculty handbook that says that institutional service is our primary objective, However, we did recognize that our service to the profession in the community is valued, and particularly in the community, as that aligns with our mission and our commitment to our communities, our native and rural communities that we serve as a regional comprehensive institution. And so our final challenge then has been the implementation. And the changes were approved unanimously, the recommendations that we had, and then we were able to implement them during the 2020 annual review period. And it was then that we realized that some of our faculty were feeling confused and overwhelmed with sort of the new freedom and flexibility that it offered. The narrative, the requirements were no longer prescriptive, as mentioned above, and vague, as mentioned above, or earlier. In terms of quantity of service. However, it did require faculty to clarify their fulfillment of their workload allocation for service and the impact of and contributions to service, the quality. So we were really beginning to shift from quantity of service to quality of service. And that became our new challenge, is how did we help faculty adjust to these new criteria?
Yeah, this is super helpful what you're describing, Erica. And it sounds like, you know, a lot of what you were doing in this time period was the foundational work, right? Criteria, setting expectations, definitions. And I think that leads us well into, you know, given what you've just described, tell us about the tool that you were able to create that helped address all of these challenges.
Yes, the tool has been really exciting for us, Alicia, because we moved away from quantity and towards quality. Again, some of our faculty were feeling a little uncertain on how to explain or showcase their contributions and the alignment with their allocated service workload. So we wanted to make sure that we were supporting our faculty in developing their service narrative for reviews, tenure, and promotion. We also wanted to make sure we were supporting our new faculty in developing a service plan. And so we came back together and began more conversations in 2020, particularly in the fall of 2020 and early 2021. And through, again, more conversations and forums, we realized we had the tools to identify and support scholarly agenda and a scholarly trajectory, along with mechanisms to plan for teaching and pedagogy. However, we did not have anything similar for service. And so from this discussion about what would and could be useful, the idea of a service mapping tool was born. And this service mapping tool is an opportunity for faculty to list their service commitments, again, institutional, community, professional, indicate their leadership role or significant contribution, and identify the time commitment for each of these activities. In many ways, it's like a visual aid and was well received by those who like those visuals as well. We have been intentional to explain in this service mapping tool that time commitment is not just about the actual meeting times. So that committee that meets once a month for 1 hour, it's not just about that. There's a lot of work that we do that goes into preparing for our meetings and our service, and a lot of work that we need to do after a meeting or service activity or engagement has been completed. And so we needed to be able to help faculty see they need to capture all of those pieces of time, not just when that meeting was being held from 2 to 3, the first Tuesday of every month. A great example might be the secretary of a committee. They're going to need to not only take the minutes, but they're going to need to review them. They're going to need to post the minutes afterwards. They're going to need to make revisions when the committee comes back together to review and vote on the minutes, maybe make amendments to the minutes. All of that time needs to be captured. And so we've been very intentional to explain that on the document and work with our faculty. And that then led us to create these additional notes and instructions at the bottom of this tool, along with a sample of what a completed tool might look like. And what we have found is for our new faculty, this tool helps them create a roadmap as they plan and build their service, both internal and external. Some of our current faculty have expressed the value and appreciation for this visual mapping of their service and the ability to examine their total time they contribute to each committee. And then we've also made this tool optional. So the mapping tool can be included with their annual review or tenure or promotion dossier as a supplement to the narrative. However, it's not intended to replace the narrative describing the impact of the work and their commitment to that.
So it sounds like transparency is a huge part of both the challenge and solution. In general, what should transparency around service entail, and how have you all addressed that with this service mapping tool?
Right. So, Alicia, the bottom line for all of us is we want to know what's expected of us in our jobs, and we don't want to be surprised in an annual review or during tenure or promotion. We want to feel valued for the work we are doing. We want to be acknowledged for the work we are doing and understand the value and the impact of our service, as well as be able to plan where to allocate our time. And so the first thing, we need to know the definition, criteria, and expectations to meet and exceed service requirements. And that is the first step that we worked on to complete. The second, that we need to have the resources and tools available to us, whether it is an evaluation rubric, a narrative format and template, or in this case, today what we're talking about is the mapping tool to support the work we are doing and create a plan going forward. This is sort of where we are right now. This tool is one way to provide transparency. It opens the door for conversation and planning. As a supervisor, I better understand the total contributions of a faculty member, their time, their leadership, their impact across the year by having a faculty member use this tool and for us to engage in conversation. And so faculty can identify their current service and even map out future service plans. For example, I have a faculty member who's been elected president-elect of her national organization. And we want to support her in that service role. And so she and I have had conversations about the role, the time commitment, and we've begun to identify ways to support her professional service and decrease her institutional service so we can provide balance. The tool is also helpful if a person is considering taking on more service or if they have too much service and it's having a negative impact on teaching or scholarship. So again, another way to look at what they're engaged in, their level of commitment, whether they want to do that individually or whether they want to sit down with me and we look at this together and talk about that. The tool also allows both the faculty member and I, when we're together, to better understand what we're doing, and it can help to really eliminate some assumptions regarding time and contributions. There's so many committees nowadays across our campus, it's impossible for me to know the time commitment and workload, effort, and impact of service for each of those committees and the work that's being done by each of our faculty in the school. And so this tool can complement that faculty narrative to provide clarity, not only for me, but for our tenure and promotion committees as well. And then with some of our faculty, we're able to map out service commitments for the upcoming year or possibly even several years in advance. And as I mentioned earlier, this is very helpful with the new faculty that we've hired the last 2 years as they're planning and thinking about reaching their service expectations and where they want to contribute. I do want to make it clear that we have no intention of using this tool as a penalty or in any way negative. Instead, it's really a reference. It's a talking point to help us reach a mutual understanding to provide support and clarity for our faculty. Again, it's a tool for us.
Yeah, absolutely. The work you all are doing, Erica, is really exciting. And what I love most is that the tool you describe is simple, yet effective and innovative. But a question I have for you is, I can imagine that even the best of ideas can go nowhere unless you have faculty buy-in and you have a way to integrate it, in this case, the tool, into current processes. How has that looked for you all?
You're right, Alicia. Faculty buy-in is so important. And it's even better and more exciting when you have faculty involved in developing the tool. And that's exactly what we did. So we have a faculty advisory committee, which consists of a representative from each of our academic programs in the school. And it was useful to engage this group in conversations about the support faculty needed and wanted implementing the new guidelines for service. As we discussed the flexibility that this new language provided, allowing us to be creative and innovative, there were requests for examples. These conversations led to the development and refinement of this service mapping tool we're talking about today. And so the tool was something that wasn't created above or pushed onto faculty. It was developed with clear input from faculty and from program representatives. We've also decided that the use of the tool is optional in the annual reviews, tenure, and promotion. The change in our language is a culture shift for us. The more clearly defined criteria and accountability of moving from quantity to quality is new, and we have to be mindful of that change. Many of us have heard that strategy eats culture for lunch. Well, culture shift takes time, trust, and transparency. This tool is one way to support faculty during this culture shift that we're going through. Allowing the use of the service mapping tool to be optional respects our faculty autonomy when determining how they want to build their case or showcase meeting or exceeding the expectations for service using these new guidelines. We recognize that some faculty may find the tool useful and beneficial, and others may not. It meets the needs of our faculty who are feeling challenged by the criteria, while also recognizing the concerns that some may think the tool could be a form of micromanaging, although certainly not the intent. And so it's important to recognize both of these needs and concerns. And so having this tool and allowing it to be optional is what works best for our school and our faculty at this time. As a matter of fact, earlier this week, we held our school's fall workshop as we're planning for the new semester to start. And we invited four faculty to share their approach to meeting the new service criteria. And during these conversations, a few of our faculty discussed the mapping tool and how they've integrated it into their planning or evaluation. And each one has done so differently, but in a way that has met their needs. And then we had a few who haven't used it at all, which is also okay. And we're currently completing year two of this tool, right? So we're just in the second year. So we need to also continue to be open-minded about the need to revise and refine the process to support our faculty. And so I would say, check back with me in another year. Maybe we'll have a follow-up conversation on how that's going.
I love the approach you all are taking, Erica, both in terms of making this optional, but also making sure that you allow room for iteration and improvement. That's wonderful. So taking stock on what you've been able to do so far, and what you envision doing in the future, could you share what you perceive to be initial challenges, outcomes, and success of the work so far?
Absolutely. Thanks, Alicia. Yeah, we definitely, you know, the challenges, outcomes, and successes, and we've got a little bit of all of those, which is exciting. One of the challenges is that we need to be intentional about maintaining ongoing communication to hear faculty's successes and needs so we can continue to meet them where they are in this culture shift. And so that's going to be a challenge to make sure that we're listening to understand instead of listening to speak. And what this will mean is that the tool could continue to evolve. We may develop a new tool and we need to be open to that. We need to continue to show trust in faculty decisions around service without them feeling micromanaged. Being mindful that even if faculty are not being micromanaged, a perception of micromanagement becomes one's reality. And so that's one of the challenges. The next challenge for us is going to be providing guidance and support to faculty around that meaningful narrative that supports and showcases their work. So again, the mapping tool is one part. It's an option, but in our new guidelines, faculty have to have a strong narrative to show how they're meeting their percent effort and the impact of their service. And so some of our faculty are stronger writers than others, and some of our faculty struggle when they have to write about themselves. And so finding ways to support their growth in this new narrative that they're writing is going to be important and meeting the needs of the faculty, each individual faculty member. The third challenge will be the approach and support provided if a faculty member does not meet expectations for service. And Alicia, I am so fortunate to work with some amazing people in my school, and not one of them wants to intentionally not meet expectations in service or any area for that matter. However, we need to be mindful that we are human and life is messy. We're fooling ourselves if we think we can meet expectations in every category of evaluation every year of our professional life. So the approach and support and grace will be critical to re-engaging the faculty member toward a path of success if they have a year where they did not meet expectations for service. So those are some of our challenges, but we've also had some successes already, even though we're just now in year two. We're early in the implementation, and we do have several successes to share, and some are unintended successes as well. But first, success for us is really faculty feeling valued in the work they are doing, knowing how each service opportunity contributes to their service workload allocation, and being recognized for the service contributions that they're engaged in. We can do this by being intentional with our service planning. And we're often very intentional about planning for scholarship and teaching, but let's create that culture where we are intentional with our service planning as well. And we've started some of this work in our school. One way is to ask our committees to clearly articulate their charge, their member composition, their timeline, and the outcomes or work that will be produced. Going a step further, we're now utilizing in our school short-term task force as opportunities to be flexible and nimble instead of creating brand new committees that are ongoing. This increases access to service and allows one to be intentional about how it fits into their workload and other time commitments. The deliverables are clearly articulated and shared at our school meetings, making our work meaningful and productive. It also has a designated time frame when we create this task force, which we have found keeps task force members interested and engaged and decreases passive participation. So this has been one of our successes as we've been shifting our culture towards intentionality. A very specific success story was a conversation I had with a faculty member over the summer. They weren't feeling comfortable about meeting service expectations under these new guidelines and thought they needed more service engagement to be able to feel better about the work they were doing. So we initially sat down with the service mapping tool and we discussed the new service criteria and some ideas they had to add more opportunities for service. And if we had just looked at the mapping tool alone, it might appear they did not meet the service criteria. However, through our conversation, we revealed that a significant time allocation and meaningful impact to our college was occurring. This individual is actually undervaluing their work. And so during our time together, we were able to identify how they were meeting and even exceeding service expectations. We even identified a plan to decrease service in other areas because of this significant contribution and time allocation and impact they were engaged in. And so that was really exciting. And it's all started with not only the new criteria, but using this mapping tool. But it is a great example of showcasing that the mapping tool alone doesn't explain the details. We need that narrative to go with it. We're also seeing early success in the support of our new faculty using this planning tool. Our new faculty get together every 3 to 4 weeks in their first semester with me, and we talk about the tool and how to plan for service, just like we're discussing teaching and scholarship planning. Now, it's too early to know the long-term success. However, in the short term, the feedback from our new faculty has been positive, and I don't see nearly as much angst or confusion with our new faculty using this.
It's wonderful to hear about how you all are thinking differently about measuring service and also to see the evolution of the work. Erica, it's great to hear this. And I think this is one of the real values of this podcast series is being able to hear about the good work that others are doing. So in that spirit, who else do you know of who is doing good work, or where else might others draw inspiration for the work that they're doing around measuring service?
Oh, another great question, Alicia. Thanks for asking that. There are disparities across service, particularly women, faculty of color, and gender nonconforming faculty who are often carrying a larger burden of service and mentoring. And the previous podcast discussed this in terms of emotional labor and cultural taxation. I'm at the moment currently very interested in the work that's happening at IUPUI around excellence in diversity, equity, and inclusion as a pathway to tenure and promotion. There is a tremendous opportunity for faculty work that contributes to diversity, equity, and inclusion to be recognized and even uniquely recognized as service. And so learning about what others are doing can provide some opportunities for us in our school to evolve in our work as well. And so that is one area that we're going to be exploring a little bit more. I also believe institutions that embrace the Boyer model of scholarship, including the fifth domain, known as the scholarship of engagement or community engaged scholarship, have an opportunity to clearly link and connect service and scholarship. And this is an area we're going to be exploring as well as our institution embraces the Boyer model of scholarship. I have read that innovation happens at the intersection of two ideas or activities, and we often hear about this and read about this. And so the intersection of scholarship and service is ripe for innovation, and it's worth our time to recognize this type of innovation as both scholarship and service. And so the Boyer model of scholarship is one area, particularly this fifth domain, the scholarship of engagement. It's one area that we really should be exploring and looking to make that connection and get excited about the opportunities we would then offer to our faculty to be very creative and innovative.
That's wonderful, Erica. Last question for you. What would you say the road ahead looks like for you all?
Oh, there's so many exciting stops along the road to success in this area. There are four that I would particularly like to share with you, Alicia. One, if we truly value service, we need to recognize the time faculty are putting into service and provide credit or recognition towards their workload for this time. We're asking faculty to do more without a clear understanding of the time commitment and the actual deliverables or outcome of service. We're often very intentional about planning scholarship and teaching, so let's now become intentional around our service. This won't mean that we get to be on all of our favorite committees. However, let's be intentional about our time allocation, our contribution, and the outcomes. If we have a course that has no course description, no credit hour allocation, no information on modality for delivery, the number of students, and so on, we'd be very hesitant to take it on. The same should apply to service. If we don't know the potential time investment, the purpose, the outcome, the deliverable, is it really a meaningful committee? Or is it a special interest discussion group or a book club or a hobby or an area of curiosity? Second thing I would share is we should further explore and identify appropriate ways to link service and scholarship through the Boyer model of scholarship, including this fifth domain, scholarship of engagement. Let's open the door for innovation at the intersection of scholarship and service and provide recognition for the contributions to service, not just scholarship alone. The third stop along the way to success, or the thing we should explore, is we need to identify and integrate accessibility, diversity, equity, and inclusive excellence in service as a marker for our annual reviews, tenure, and promotion. We know there are disparities across service. We've mentioned those earlier, and I believe the next podcast will also be talking about these. If we know this, we need to intentionally acknowledge it and include this work as service. And then finally, let's explore the development of a rubric that engages faculty in a self-evaluation along with a supervisor evaluation. Together, the faculty member and the supervisor can engage in meaningful conversation and planning that supports an individual towards promotion, tenure, post-tenure review, merit, annual evaluations, whatever that next step is for that faculty member. And so let's explore that as an avenue to engage in that meaningful conversation to support our faculty. So those would be the areas I would highlight right now, sort of our road to success as we move forward and look ahead.
Well, I can say, Erica, I'm inspired and also motivated by hearing the work you all are doing and how you're thinking about it. I want to offer a very sincere thank you to you for being with us and sharing your perspective. It's been incredibly insightful and valuable, and I know others would find the same.
Oh, thank you, Alicia. It's been a pleasure today. I appreciate your time.
So a quick note before we wrap up, be sure to stay tuned for the next podcast in the series where we will explore the topic of addressing inequities in the process with Donna Garcia of California State University, San Bernardino. Also, mark your calendars for a live follow-up Q&A discussion with all three of our guests in this podcast series that'll take place on September 28th from 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern. So with that, I'll leave everybody. Thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.